rail, nor do these circumstances, strangely enough, have any adverse effect upon the special relationship with the US. However, under the unwritten terms of the special relationship, the US gives Israel its latest, most advanced and secret weapons, often before they are available to our own armed forces, while Israel remains so secretive that it has flatly refused admittance to a committee of the US Senate to visit its peaceful nuclear reactor installations at Dimona. Israel has also refused to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty sponsored by the US. Customarily, allies are required to respect each other's strongly held views in critical areas affecting international peace. Israel, however, defiantly continues to build new settlements on confiscated Arab lands on the West Bank despite pleas from the US that these actions violate international law and create additional and serious obstacles to any Middle East peace settlement. Is it conceivable that the US would tolerate conduct of this kind from such allies as Britain, Germany, or Japan? The mystery of the US liberty. The first clear indication of the special nature of the relationship with Israel came with the notorious Israeli attack on the US liberty. During the 1967 Six-Day War between Israel and Egypt, the US electronic and intelligence research vessel Liberty was cruising in international waters in the Mediterranean and was suddenly attacked by Israeli torpedo boats and jet aircraft. The attack, which lasted almost 2 hours, killed 34 American sailors and wounded 171. A US Naval Court of Inquiry found that the Liberty was, without question, in international waters, the weather was clear, the ship's identity plainly marked, and the US flag waving in the wind. The attack was apparently ordered by Moshe Dayan to prevent the US from intercepting Israeli messages. When the circumstances of the attack became known, an elaborate conspiracy of secrecy was organized from President Johnson on down to cover up the extent of Israel's involvement and to keep from the American people the deliberate nature of the Israeli attack. Israel, of course, protested its innocence and promised to pay for the damage to the ship. But even this small reparation was not forthcoming, despite repeated efforts and requests by the State Department over the last 20 years. The story of the intentional attack on the US liberty and the shameful efforts of the US government to cover up Israel's duplicity is told in a book entitled Assault on the Liberty by the cipher officer of the US liberty, James M. Enns Jr., published after his retirement from the Navy in 1980. However, the US has more than held up its end of the special relationship. At the beginning of the October 1973 war against Egypt, Israel had suffered severe losses in tanks and planes, and was on the verge of defeat when the US, under Nixon and Kissinger, swiftly mounted an enormous military airlift which, according to Prime Minister Golda Meir, saved Israel. Another well-known incident of Israel's indifference to, or defiance of, its obligations to the US was reported in the April 8, 1979, edition of the Los Angeles Times. According to the Times, a State Department spokesman announced that the circumstances, scale, and duration of Israel's incursion into southern Lebanon, in which over 1,000, mostly civilian, casualties were inflicted, raises serious questions as to whether US arms supplied to Israel were used illegally. Israel, in violation of its agreement with the US, used the latest high-tech, anti-personnel, cluster, bombs which break into hundreds of fragments capable of massive killing. These bombs were received by Israel from the US, on the condition that they would be used only in an all-out defensive war, where Israel's survival was at stake. The Lebanon incursion was totally offensive and many targets were Palestinian refugee camps. A Los Angeles Times editorial appearing in the April 9, 1979, edition comments on the matter. The basic issue, rather, is Israel's violation of its agreement with the US that was meant to control how and when the CBUs, cluster bombs, could be used. This goes very much to the value and enforceability of the conditions that the US often attaches to its arm transfers abroad, and at least in the immediate case it goes as well to the reliability of Israel's pledges, emphasis supplied. It is the irrational nature of this special relationship with Israel that our allies and the other nations of the world cannot comprehend. What they are unable to understand is that Israel decides for itself what it will and will not do in its relations with the rest of the world, and the US provides and finances the military weaponry and technology necessary to support those policies, even though the US may be in total opposition to them. If such Israeli policies result in war, the US immediately mobilizes all available military equipment and weaponry, depleting in the process of its own critical reserves, in order to give Israel whatever is necessary to achieve victory. It makes no difference that, in doing so, the US may be severely straining the bonds between us and our allies in Western Europe and Japan, and jeopardizing our relationship with the Arab world, not to mention running the grave risk of a nuclear confrontation. After Israel's war is over, it is then the duty of the US, under our special relationship, to provide new billions of dollars worth of the most sophisticated and advanced weapons available to maintain Israel's continued defiance of the rest of the world, and of the US to make the situation even more bizarre. Israel has copied much of the advanced weapons technology given to it by the US, and has been marketing it around the world. In effect, the US has become the research and development division of the Israeli armament industry, which is now an important international arms supplier. One of its best customers is South Africa, against whom the US is trying to lead a world boycott. Aliki Fortress. One of the most insidious consequences of the special relationship is the demoralizing effect it has had on the personnel in our State and Defense departments. The Pentagon houses most of the Department of Defense, and is the core of American military security. Across the Potomac is the Department of State, the nerve center of our nation's worldwide diplomatic network. These buildings are channels through which flow, each day, thousands of messages dealing with the nation's top secrets. No one can enter either building without special identification or advance clearance, and all entrances are heavily guarded. These buildings are, in effect, fortresses where the nation's most precious secrets are carefully guarded by the most advanced security technology. How safe are those secrets? As far as Israel is concerned, they are an open book. According to an American ambassador, who had a long career in the Middle East, the leaks to Israel are fantastic. If I have something I want the Secretary of State to know, but don't want Israel to know, I must wait till I have a chance to see him personally. It is a fact of life that everyone in authority is reluctant to put anything on paper that concerns Israel, if it is to be withheld from Israel's knowledge, says the ambassador. Nor do such people even feel free to speak in a crowded room of such things. The ambassador offers an example from his own experience. He had received a call from a friend in the Jewish community who wanted to warn him, as a friend, that all details of a lengthy document on Middle East policy that he had just dispatched overseas were out. The document was classified top secret, the diplomat recalls. I didn't believe what he said, so my friend read me every word of it over the phone. In the view of this diplomatic source, leaks to pro-Israel activists are not only pervasive throughout the two departments, but are intimidating and very harmful to our national interests. He says that, because of the ever-present Xerox machine, diplomats proceed on the assumption that even messages they send by the most secure means will be copied and passed on to eager hands. We just don't dare put sensitive items on paper. A factor making the pervasive insecurity even greater is the knowledge that leaks of secrets to Israel, even when noticed, which is rare, are never investigated. Whatever intelligence the Israelis want, whether political or technical, they obtain promptly and without cost at the source. Officials, who normally would work vigilantly to protect our national interests by identifying leaks and bringing charges against the offenders, are demoralized. In fact, they are disinclined even to question Israel's tactics for fear this activity will cause the Israeli lobby to mark them as troublemakers and take measures to nullify their efforts or even harm their careers. The lobby's intelligence network, having numerous volunteer friend lines to tap, reaches all parts of the executive branch where matters concerning Israel are handled. Awareness of this seepage keeps officials, whatever rung of the ladder they occupy, from making or even proposing decisions that are in the US interest. If, For example, an official should indicate opposition to an Israeli request during a private interdepartmental meeting or, worse still, put it in an intra-office memorandum. He or she must assume that this information